King Hiranyakashipu said, Prahlada, my dear Prahlad, Anuchatam,
let it be told,
Tata, my dear son, Swaditam, well learned, Kinchit, something, Uttamam, very nice, Kalena Itavata, for so much time, Ayushman, O long-lived one, Yat, which, Asikshat, has learned, Guruho, from your teachers, Bhavan, yourself. So translation, Hiranyakashipu said, my dear Prahlad, my dear son, O long-lived one, for so much time you have heard many things from your teachers. Now, please repeat to me whatever you think is the best of that knowledge. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In this verse, Hiranyakashipu inquires from his son what he has learned from his guru. Prahlad Maharaja's gurus were of two kinds, Sanda and Amarga, the sons of Shukracharya, in the seminal disciplic succession, were the gurus appointed by his father. But his other guru was the exalted Narada Muni, who had instructed Prahlad when Prahlad was within the womb of his mother. Prahlad Maharaj responded to the inquiry of his father with the instructions he had received from his spiritual master, Narada. Thus, there was again a difference of opinion because Prahlad Maharaj wanted to relate the best thing he had learned from his spiritual master, whereas Hiranyakashipu expected to hear about the politics and diplomacy. Prahlad had learned from Sanda and Anamarga. Now the dissension between the father and son became increasingly intense as Prahlad Maharaj began to say what he had learned from his guru, Narada Muni. Okay. So, Hiranyakashipu Uvacha Paradhanu Chatham Tata Svatitam Kinjadutamam Aklenai Ta Vata Yushman Yad Asikshad Guror Bhavan. So, Om Gana Timidanda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmiritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, in the Vedic literatures, you find the name Shukracharya mentioned in many instances. And it's interesting why he took the side of the demons. Actually, he had a brother named Brihaspati. And Brihaspati was chosen to be the priest of the demigods. And so Shukracharya was also thinking, I want to be the priest of the demigods, but because he was frustrated in that attempt, therefore he thought, if I can't be the priest of the demigods, I'll be their enemy. I'm angry with them. Of course, this is a symptom of the mode of passion, also a symptom of contemplating on sense objects. When you contemplate on sense objects, the same thing that may be desirable before, if you can't have it, you get angry with. I'll give you a practical example of that in the case of Arjuna and Urvasi. Urvasi actually was the most beautiful girl in the heavenly planets. And she actually came from Krishna, Naranarayan. They created her when the demigods attempted to lure Naranarayan with their own girls. Then Naranarayan rishis, they produced Urvasi and said, take her back with you. Anyway, so she was very beautiful. And in one particular instance, Arjuna happened to go to the heavenly planets. And the reason he was going to the heavenly planets was to get some training in martial arts. In other words, weapons. And also, he wanted to get training in dancing. Or at least they trained him in dancing, so later on he could become Brihanala, the dance teacher. So, he was dancing, and guess what? Urvasi was watching him. And Urvasi is one of the, let's say, apsaras, or to speak in another language, prostitutes in the heavenly planet. And there, it's a little bit different, because the apsaras, they just change from one man to another. You know, it's not considered illicit sex life there. Although it's maya. It's interesting. Something can be not illicit, but also maya. It's like when one goes to the movies. It's not against the regulated principles. I mean, we don't vow no movies, no gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication. But it's still maya. Or if one watches the World Cup, it's still maya, even though it's not against the regulated principles. So the demigods do a lot of things that are not against regulated principles, but they're completely in maya. Or 90% in maya. So Urvasi got attracted to Arjuna, seeing his dancing. And she was thinking, you know, I got to have him. And what happened is that one night she showed up at Arjuna's house or wherever he was staying, knocked on the door, and he said, who's there in the door? And she said, it's me, lover. And she showed her feminine wiles. In other words, whatever she did, waved her eyebrows or something at Arjuna. And Arjuna understood that she was actually one of his ancestors in the Kuru dynasty. There's a story of Pururava in the Bhagavatam. Pururava and Urvasi, anyway, there's a whole story of that he was attached to her and he was running around the world when she went away, because she went away that he violated his promise not to be naked in front of her. And eventually, he went back to Urvasi. Whatever you meditate on at the time of death, yam yam vapi parambhava yajateyante kalevaram. That's where you go. Smarambhavam yajateyante kalevaram. So anyway, she proposed to Arjuna, and Arjuna really wasn't interested. This also indicates to us how to become detached in this world, because Arjuna was famous for being one-pointed, ekeha kuru nandana. Of course, there's that famous example when Arjuna was asked to shoot an arrow at the eye of a bird. All he saw was the eye. He didn't see the bird, he didn't see the tree, he didn't see the teachers, he didn't see the students, he didn't see anything but the eye. So Arjuna, one thing about him, he was extremely determined. It's a good example for us that whatever he decided to do, he would do, and he wouldn't look at anything else or be deterred from that. So Arjuna really wasn't deterred by Urvasi. And basically, Urvasi was so beautiful, she would make any of you men faint. I mean, you wouldn't be able to keep your consciousness if you saw her. You wouldn't be able to hear Bhagavatam. You'd just run out the door. If she showed up there, all you men would immediately run away. Wouldn't sit anymore. You'd offend me by going to see her. And anyway, you'd just be like little dogs. Whatever you want, we'll give you. And that's how people get. I mean, of course, with the Mohini Murti, the demons got that way, and they even gave up immortality. So Arjuna basically said something that was a real insult to Urvasi, to someone who's in love with you. He said, mother. And actually, it's interesting, Prabhupada said that one who is Krishna conscious should see every other woman other than his wife as his mother. Of course, it doesn't mean he has to call everyone Mataji, because sometimes it doesn't work when the lady is 16 years old and you're 85. But the respect, the intention, in other words, like his mother means with the same respect. Matashri, actually. Actually, the correct Sanskrit is not Mataji, but Matashri. Because Mataji is Hindi and Matashri is Sanskrit. So So anyway, Arjuna said, Mataji, or Matashri. And she immediately, she was in love with Arjuna 1 second, and the next second, she hated his guts. It's pretty interesting, isn't it? How someone can love you in 1 minute, and another minute want to kill you. So what is that love? That is the love where you want to get something from someone. And if you can't get it, you would say, it was worthless anyway. Just like sometimes we even experience that with our computer. It doesn't work properly. And usually we love our computer. But if it doesn't work, we have to hold ourselves back from smashing it. So you get angry at the same thing you're attached to, which is really interesting. I mean, that's why most violence occurs in the home, not outside. Some people think it's dangerous to be out at night with dacoits, but sometimes it's dangerous to be at home. You got to hire a chokidar. So, I'm just joking. So she got angry and she cursed Arjuna, as we know, to become a eunuch. She said, if I can't have you, guess what, Arjuna? No one's going to have you. And for Arjuna, that was probably one of the worst curses you could probably have, because a kshatriya is very proud, and if a kshatriya has to be a eunuch, it's like death. It's worse than death. As Krishna says in the Gita, for one who has been honored, dishonored is worse than death. So Arjuna was very, very upset at that particular... It's not time to greet the deities yet. So Arjuna was very, very upset, and of course that curse was mitigated, in other words, reduced, when Indra said it'll just take place for a year. And that'll be very helpful for you because you're going to be Brihanala, or you're going to be the dancing teacher. So it was actually part of Krishna's plan. But the whole point is the anger that one experiences. That one wants to get even. One thinks, I want to teach you a lesson. And even parents do that with children sometimes. If the children don't behave the way they would like, I'm going to teach you a lesson. I remember my mother would often say, I'm going to make it so you can't sit for a whole week. I'm sure that may be familiar to some of you. You know, spanking or brush or belt on the rear end. So this is not really a sign of Krishna consciousness. You know, as much as I love my mother, it's not a sign of Krishna consciousness, because in Krishna consciousness, we have this quality of forgiveness. Even if someone does something that we don't like, which happens about 90% of the time, and that's part of life, isn't it? That things happen that you don't want to happen. And actually, there's a non-devotee rule that if something bad could happen, it will happen. And that's the way the world is. So we are meant to forgive, forget, and love all other living entities. So getting back to the case of Shukracharya began to hate the demigods, and then he was planning out how to get even with the demigods, and basically he got frustrated in each and every attempt. So actually there's an interesting story in the Ramayana about this one attempt he got frustrated in. One attempt he made was to get one of the demon ladies married to a Brahmin man, that's Kekashi married to Vishravas, so that they would have a powerful demon, a Brahmin Rakshasa, to defeat the demigods. And of course that powerful Brahmin Rakshasa, that was actually Ravana. And of course we all know the story of the Ramayana. So continually he's making these plans. And his children, Sandana and Amarka, as they say, a fruit doesn't fall far from the tree. That means the children take after the parent. And there's many ways they take after the parent. First of all, when the parents conceive the child, as Prabhupada said, whatever is the mentality of the parents, you get that type of child. And that's why in Krishna consciousness we have this thing called the Garbhadhan Samskara. In the Garbhadhan Samskara, the parents are actually praying for the proper child. They are praying either for a ray of Vishnu or some devotee who they can help in their devotional service. And actually, to be a parent, Lord Vrishabhadeva says that you have to be almost qualified to be, as a guru. He says no one should be a mother, father, worshipful deity, guru, unless he or she, and that refers to the ladies too, can save their dependents from the cycle of birth and death. Because if the son or daughter is not a devotee or a learned person, according to Chanaka Pandit, they're mutra. In other words, Prabhupada describes that as son of urine or daughter of urine. So it's a very heavy statement. In other words, useless. Even Advaitacharya, he had six sons and three were not devotees, and he rejected them. He said, they're not my sons. Even Advaitacharya did that. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. So very, very important if one takes the position of being a parent. So anyway, so obviously, Shukracharya, Shukra of course means seminal succession, the Acharya of seminal succession. Obviously, he had the bad mentality when he was conceiving Sandanamarka, and they took after the father. Now, another point about seminal succession, this is actually very interesting too. We're having a whole discussion now on the internet, because there are people who are making propaganda that you can only be a Brahmin by seminal succession. The same ugly philosophy that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur defeated at Midnapore when he had that discussion of whether Brahmins are higher than Vaishnavas or Vaishnavas are automatically Brahmins, and he proved that Vaishnavas are automatically Brahmins. That same discussion is now going on the internet because people seeing the success of ISKCON are taking advantage of it. Some of the Goswami families, I'm not going to mention who, and that hereditary Goswami, they're not renounced, you know, sannyasis. They're called Goswamis because that happens to be their family name. If you say, who are you, Mr. and Mrs.? And they say, oh, we're Mr. and Mrs. Goswami. I'm Mrs. Goswami, and that's Mr. Goswami. I mean, that's the way it is. It's a Goswami families. So because they are in this particular family, descendants, so-called brahmanas, then they say that the devotees in ISKCON are actually not, it's a very great offense. They say they're not actually part of the Gaudiya Sampradaya. Heavy. And they're coming to America. I mean, the reason they're coming to America is there's money there. Much more than Fiji. So you don't see, you might say you see some of them in Fiji, but the best ones or the worst ones go to America and Australia and the Goswami families. And they're making this Shukra, seminal type of presentation that only those who are born in Brahmin families can actually be gurus or Brahmins or something like that. And there is one quote in the Hari Bhakti Vilas that says, you know, if there's a Brahmin, someone in a Brahmin family and he's a guru, you should accept him, etc. However, Prabhupada comments that a lot of the Hari Bhakti Vilas was influenced by some smarta conceptions. Smarta means ritualistic Brahmin conceptions. And the reason that was there was because they were preaching to smarta Brahmins. It's like bridge preaching. When you're preaching to smarta Brahmins, you got a little, give them a little something they're interested in. You got to praise them a little bit. So, anyway, so they make so many arguments. And then we have counter-arguments. Of course, we have a lot of counter-arguments, which they don't accept. Which is, one is that Haridas Thakur, he was a Namacharya. And he was in a Muslim family. And they have a counter-argument for that. They say, well, we heard that Haridas Thakur was born in a Brahmin family, and he was raised by a Muslim. Which is not true. He was actually in a Muslim family. But they make up all the historical data in order to counteract our arguments. And of course we have more arguments like Narottama Das Thakur, he was considered to be in the Shudra caste, and then he was initiating many, many high caste Brahmins. So, I mean, obviously we can defeat this particular argument that they have, that one has to be a Brahmana to be a guru or whatever like that. And actually Lord Chaitanya said, Kiva Vipra Kiva Nyasi Shudra Kena Noye Krishna Tattva Veda Se Guru Hoya, famous verse. That whether one is a learned person, a Brahmin, a Shudra, whatever, if he knows the science of Krishna, then he can be a guru. And that means, of course, as we're having another discussion in ISKCON, even the ladies can be gurus. Because it's not a bodily consideration. I mean, if Krishna consciousness was based on the body, I'm in the wrong movement. We're all in the wrong movement. That you only go, you can only have a spiritual form if you have the right material body. Think about how illogical that is. You can only go back to Godhead or be a guru if your body of bile, mucus, and stool has been born in the right family. But the body is just Tridaduke. Of course, there are certain samskaras, but in Kali Yuga, it's actually said in the Bhagavatam that many demons will be born in Brahmin families. Just like one time I went to a funeral here, and there was one of the professional Brahmin who came to do the funeral. And before he came in to do the funeral, he was smoking a cigarette right outside. And then he put his cigarette out. Of course, his breath still smelled like cigarettes when he came in. And then he was unclean, and he did the funeral ritual. So that's going on. This is Kali Yuga. So anyway, so we don't accept this, that someone has to be Shukracharya, because that's actually what's being propagated by these people. And they're coming, and they're even denying that Bhaktivinoda, Gorkhashordas Babaji Maharaj initiated Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur. First of all, they say Gorkhashordas Babaji Maharaj. I mean, even they criticize him, that he was from a Vaishya family. So he couldn't be a guru. And Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur, of course, he's from a Brahmin family. That he couldn't have taken initiation, therefore, the actual disciplic succession is Vipini Vihari Goswami, who is the Diksha Guru of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Anyway, it's a little complicated here. But the point is that we have to be ready to counteract these arguments that people are giving. Because that means our movement will be simply based on the material platform. And Srila Bhakti Sananda Saraswati Thakur and Bhaktivinoda Thakur elaborated many arguments against these deviant Vaishnava sects. There's the Nityananda Vamsa sect, which people say that you have to be a descendant, or at least a disciplic descendant of Lord Nityananda, to be a bona fide guru. There's Vaishnava sects where they dress up as women. The men dress as women, not the women. The women, I don't know how they dress. But anyway, the men dress as women, and they may break the regulative principles by dancing as women. So we have all these deviant people who think that they are Krishna conscious, which is really interesting, because people do have a tendency to make mistakes, be illusion, cheat, and imperfect senses. So they think they're Krishna consciousness, but their motivation is simply mundane. They're interested in money. Money, prestige, whatever they're interested in, it has nothing or very little to do with Krishna. So we have to be very, very cautious, because eventually here in Fiji, I mean, you do have Smarta Brahmins here in Fiji, you have all sorts of other deviants, but I don't think any of the Goswami people have come here yet, have they? No, not yet. So anyway, so this is something we're dealing with on the GBC, or especially in America, the American GBC, of dealing with this particular thing. So that's what Shukracharya means. Shukracharya. So anyway, so then you have Prahlad Maharaj, who's been instructed by Shukracharya's son, Sanda Namarka, and Prahlad Maharaj really didn't accept him as his guru. He wasn't as a guru. He wasn't a blind follower, that everything my teacher tells me must be right. And we shouldn't be either. We should always be ready to examine, use our intelligence. Prabhupada said blind following and absurd inquiries are to be condemned. So the guru gives some instruction. Obviously, we accept that is coming from Krishna. But one has to be very, very cautious in accepting preceptors and in choosing a guru. Like, in ISKCON, I guess most, everyone here in the room has a guru already, but anyway, so before choosing a guru, we have to train people up who are coming to Krishna consciousness, this is part of the disciple course, to understand what are the qualities of one who is a bona fide guru. Not simply that one has a beard, of course in ISKCON they don't have beards, but anyway, not that, hopefully not. So not that someone, you know, just like, looks like a Bollywood star, and then you think he's spiritual just because he's a Bollywood star. I'll tell you a funny story about that. I had one disciple, lady disciple, I introduced to a Bollywood star, you know, male. His name was Vivek Oberoi. And this girl, I introduced him to her, and they shook hands, and she went into trance. Right after she met him, just like... And then, you know, about 2 hours later, she came back into external consciousness. And she said to me, boy, Krishna consciousness is so wonderful. And I said, that's not Krishna consciousness that you just experienced. That was Maya. But we have this tendency, you know, to be an illusion and make mistakes. So we have to be very careful when picking a guru or picking any sort of mentor. Because it's not only we have our Diksha Gurus, we should have so many Siksha Gurus in the Krishna Consciousness Movement, mentors. We call them mentors, Siksha Gurus. So you have to be very, very careful and see, you know, Samitpani, Shrochiam, Brahmanishtam, to see if they're actually qualified to give you instruction. You know, by their behavior, by their words, by their sadhana. All these things are very important points of discrimination to see if they're actually serving as divine grace of the Prabhupada. You know, sometimes people leave ISKCON, or accept a guru outside of ISKCON, not understanding that they're not connected with Prabhupada then. Why? Because the guru, even if he was in ISKCON before, is not following Prabhupada now. And therefore, he's not connected. Even though you feel, you think you're ecstatic, you think you're Krishna conscious, but Prabhupada talked about living an hallucination. That it's like living an hallucination. Hallucination means like ghosts and, you know, things like that. You see at night, just like last night, I had so many dreams. I had one dream, I was going to the biggest company in New York and having a Harinam right there, IBM or something like that, and all the devotees came and joined me. And then I woke up. And that's an hallucination. Of course, it was a good hallucination. There's good ones and bad ones. But still, it's an hallucination, just illusion. It's not real. So in the same way, it's like that. If we don't accept the right guru, then your spiritual life is not there. Even though you think you're spiritual, you're not. Yeah, I mean, I go to Radha Kund all the time and see a lot of people who think they're spiritual. And by Prabhupada's mercy, I can actually see. I mean, of course, they're getting the benefit of living there. I understand that. But it's not, they're not half as spiritual as someone who's dedicated his life to preaching Krishna consciousness, to serving Srila Prabhupada's mission. I mean, I can see it. By Prabhupada's mercy, you know, Prabhupada's given me a little bit of discrimination to see these things. So we have to have discrimination, intelligence. That means reading Prabhupada's books, understanding. That's one of the reasons we have this disciple course that I recommend everybody take, but especially those who are going to be initiated in the future. Anyway, so Sandha and Amarka were not gurus. Or as Prabhupada would say, they were gurus. I mean, sometimes people mispronounce the Guru Vashtika and they say, Vande Guru, Guru, you know. They say, all obeisances of the cow or the ass or something like that. So you have to watch your pronunciation or else you get a cow instead of a guru. That's all right. I mean, cows are actually pure. So you can't go wrong. I offer my obeisance at the lotus feet of the cow. So guru. So anyway, so we have to see whether someone is guru or guru, discriminate in that particular way. So anyway, Prahlad Maharaj rejected the instructions of Sandha and Amarka, and he was very happy to take the instructions of Narada Muni. And he wasn't the most obedient student in school. He waited till his teachers walked out, and then he did his Krishna consciousness with his other students. So that also Prabhupada comments in that regard, that sometimes we have to go in disguise to preach Krishna consciousness. Not that we don't break any laws, but for example, when Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, my dear godbrother, was preaching in Russia and in Eastern Europe, he had to go in disguise and jump from trains to try to escape. So sometimes we have to be a little tricky in presenting Krishna consciousness, and sometimes we have to give people a little bit at one time rather than the whole thing. We can't, as I was mentioning in a previous class, not here, that it took me 2 more years to join the Krishna consciousness movement because people preached too heavy to me in the beginning. 1969, I walked into a temple and they told me I was going to hell unless I joined and put on bed sheets, shaved my head, and Kali Yuga was coming, and I was going to be a dwarf living underground, eating other people, like Fiji, you know, cannibal islands. So I just ran out of there as fast as I could. And I said, wow, too much for me. And it took me 2 more years and Prabhupada coming to personally save me to join the Hare Krishna movement. Prabhupada hadn't come. The devotees were just too heavy for me. So we have to learn the art of presenting Krishna consciousness in a palatable way to people so they're encouraged to join the Krishna consciousness movement. So Prahlad Maharaj was instructed by Narada Muni in that particular way, and Prahlad Maharaj took advantage and instructed his schoolmates in a very tricky fashion, and later on we'll read about how he got in trouble for doing this. The next verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam is actually a verse that makes Hiranyakashipu extremely angry. It's the famous verse of Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. What's the most important thing you learned? Well, here's Navabhakti for you. And tomorrow, maybe not tomorrow, tomorrow's actually an appearance day. It's actually, it's not an appearance day. Sunday is the appearance day, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Tomorrow is what, Vamana? Is it Vamana? Yeah, Vamana. Vamana's appearance day, so we'll be speaking about Lord Vamana. So, any questions or comments? We have three or four minutes left to class. Questions, comments, arguments, problems? Is everybody awake? Nishinga. Yeah, no, he wasn't going against his father. He was going against some of his father's instructions, for sure. But he was very loving with his father. I mean, what he had said in the Bhagavatam is that, Dad, you know, you better take vanaprastha. You're too attached to everything. So he was trying to give good instructions. But, of course, the statement is that if you give good instructions to a fool, upadeshu vimokanam prakopaya nishante, they get angry. So Prahlad Maharaj, he had love for his father, love for his teachers, but he only spoke the truth. I mean, he was intelligent enough to understand the truth would get him in trouble. This is another interesting point. But he stuck to the truth. He knew he wasn't ready to placate his father and just tell him some lie, even though he knew the truth would actually put him in dire danger. So he spoke the truth. The same way we should always speak the truth, try to be as palatable as possible, satya priyahitam, try to speak truthfully, pleasingly, and beneficially. So we have to be careful of not hitting people over the head with the truth. But Prahlad Maharaj was very bold, so we should be very bold, like Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who is known as Nishinga Guru, like you. There's Nishinga Guru right there. Because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur would also get physical with the people he was preaching to. If someone happened to be a Mayavadi, he would actually grab him by the neck, by the shirt like this, and say, if you think everything is one, why don't you just wear a piece of cotton instead of this sewn shirt? If cotton is the same, it's all cotton. So just wear a piece. Here's a ball of cotton. You can wear that. and people would run away from him. And he had this cutting technique. It's described. He would just really go after the impersonalists. So much so that even some of his disciples started to criticize him for that. And Prabhupada said they fell down as a result. And there's an interesting story that one time two of his disciples went on a preaching tour. There was a sannyasi and a brahmachari. And the brahmachari just was really heavy about a particular mission that's very popular here in Fiji. I'm not going to mention which mission because we may offend people. But an impersonalist mission. And he called the founder basically a rascal. And then there was a riot. People got out, you know, they were ready to burn the sannyasi and brahmachari. And the sannyasi and brahmachari ran away. The sannyasi went to Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur and complained. He said, "This brahmachari, look what he did. You should kick him out." And Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur said, "Oh, he's done a nice job." So there was this really strong preaching that Bhakti, because it's important. If someone has a boil, you have to lance the boil. You understand? Lance the boil. Boil means like there's an infection. Lancing means the doctor has to stick some sort of pin in to get the pus out. So this impersonalism is just pus. Literally. It's disgusting. When a devotee hears impersonal philosophy, it's like you put some pus and blood in front of him. And you get very angry. Prabhupada said that because Krishna's offended. It's like saying that your beloved, you know, wife or child is blind and deaf and dumb. Like if someone goes, some of you have children, if you go to their child, your child, and you say, even though your child can see, your child is dumb and idiot and ugly. I mean, you can't believe what will happen to you at that point. Because the parents love the child. So we love Krishna. So we get very angry with impersonalism. And Prabhupada's pranam mantra is specifically in reference to that, right? Nirvishesha sunyavadi. In this Western world, you've come, Namaste Saraswati Devi. You are the energy, basically, of Saraswati, a representative of Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur. So, anyway. So, it's time to greet the deities. Thank you very much. It's nice to be here with all the assembled Vaishnavas. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada. Ki Jai.